At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Thursday morning, September 21st, 2023. It is the Beating the Book podcast, Megapod, week number 3 in the National Football League. 21st of September, I go right to our guest, Wes Reynolds. What's the significance of the 21st of September, Wes?
Do you remember, Gil? Do you remember the 21st night of September?
That's right. I knew I could count on Wes. That's Wes Reynolds from VSiN, who does a show every weeknight with Matt Humans. At what time exactly, Wes, is it every night?
We are at 9 Eastern to 12 Eastern, and then 9 or 6 to 9 Pacific.
And the name of the show is VSiN Tonight?
The name of the program is VSiN Tonight, yes.
VSiN Tonight, very simple name to the program. Matt and Wes know their thing. That is on VSiN each and every Monday through Friday. And, of course, the staples of the show in his mom's cork attic, back in his mom's cork attic somewhere in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, star of the Showtime docuseries Action, and a man for whom many are clamoring to sing the Miami Dolphins fight song because he let us know that before the show started, Todd Wishnev. How you doing?
You got to give the people what they want, Gilly.
You really do. What was your other thing? Yinzer you've done, but Miami Dolphins theme song you have not, so I'm sure you'll work that in with lyrics of your choice.
Look, anybody who's going to discuss Tomlin and the boys need to talk in a certain way. And that.
All right. So, by the way, if this sounds different than it normally does, it's because the Megapod audio was such a botch last week that I promised we'd do something different. This was sort of a one-week compromise where we're doing this remotely. I'm at home. Next week, we will go back, hopefully, they tell me, with more bandwidth in an actual casino studio control room environment. I don't know what that means, but technically it should be better next week. So this is a 1 week fix. And of course, the other staple to the show this year from Bear Bets Pod on Fox, which is Chris Felica, both a pro and college football podcast. He is a man whose Q rating is increasing by the day. Will Hill, how you doing, Will?
Gil, boys, what's going on? Now that we have Wes here, this is exciting, but I hope we stick to football and some sort of Jeopardy trivia contest doesn't break out because we are all in big trouble with Wes here. So hopefully we stick to picking the games.
Wes, do you participate in like bar trivia contests? Do you do that kind of thing?
I do not, actually. Perhaps I should. It might go better than my NFL picks did last week. So maybe I can make some money that way.
What happened last week? What did you miss on?
2-3 in all the contests. I did lose a Survivor with the Denver Broncos. Still have one left with Buffalo.
So did I.
But that was I felt last week was the week to gamble a little bit because there weren't like a lot of like big favorites that I felt you could use. So I took a shot with Denver, 21-3. You're feeling good, and then all of a sudden things done changed.
I've lost an entry each week. Both first weeks, Wes, on the Denver Broncos. So I am an idiot for doing that. If I ever pick them again, you have my permission to slap me in the neck because they have just destroyed me. So I'm down to 3. I started with 5. By the way, we don't usually start with Survivor, but I just want to say this. We'll start since that was a natural segue. I texted Todd and Will, or maybe Will and Felica last night, that I'm setting the over-under on the number of entries in Circus Survivor this week to be eliminated, including non-submissions, at 99.5. I don't think anybody's getting knocked out this week. I don't think there's an upset. And I think that you probably can pick any number of teams this week. Who did you settle on, Wes? Have you said?
Haven't done the entry yet for week three, but more than likely it's probably going to be take the easiest one. It's probably going to be the Chiefs this week, because I feel like this is a week where you have to burn a premium team. I don't want to use Dallas, obviously, for the reasons of, you know, using them for Thanksgiving and the fact that they're going to be the biggest favorite on that Thanksgiving Black Friday portion that we have to use for Survivor. And, you know, Jacksonville, they're getting close to 10, but I don't feel confident using Jacksonville necessarily this week. I haven't liked what I've seen the previous 2 weeks, so I'm probably gonna, you know, quote unquote wuss out and take the biggest favorite, and that's the Chiefs.
Yeah, you're allowed to say wuss out here. Yes. Think I'm going to do some combination of the Chiefs and Jacksonville, because I'm with you, even though Jacksonville is a Christmas team. But I think some combination of Kansas City, because Kansas City plays the Bears at home. You're not getting a better moment for them. And Jacksonville home against Houston, despite them being an easy schedule, you're not getting a better moment for them. Wes, did you pick yours already?
Wait. Jacksonville's a Christmas team? I have the three Monday Christmas games.
No, Kansas City. Kansas City is a Christmas team.
Jacksonville. Okay, you said Jacksonville.
Oh, did I? Okay. My apologies. Yeah, no, I meant Chiefs are. Will, what did you pick?
Haven't decided. If I had to pick it now, like if you gave me truth serum, I'd probably pick Jacksonville. I'm either trying to talk myself into or trying to talk myself out of Seattle. If it's Andy Dalton on the road in Seattle, I don't know if I can get there. I don't know if I want to get too cute, but like he said, it's a week where you can go in a number of different directions. Seattle is one that's interesting, but I'd probably go with Jacksonville right this second.
But think about that. This is a week with so many big favorites, which we'll, again, when we get to our final question, which is the big favorite most likely to lose outright. It's actually pretty, you know, many answers can be had this week. But that actually constitutes getting frisky this week, a six-point favorite, Seattle, right? Like, that's how big the favorites are, that 6 points. Todd, you're in this too, right? Are you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take Jacksonville because I did some charting of all the different games. And like when you get later, if you survive till later, you're going to need some of these teams like Kansas City, Dallas, Denver. Some of the other ones. Not Denver. But that's what I charted it out. Like, I'm going to take Jacksonville this week.
You're still going to need.
Yeah, I have San Francisco. Right. Later on against Seattle in week 14.
Yeah, San Francisco still has a home game against Arizona. Seattle still has a home game against Arizona. Miami still has a home game against Arizona, I believe. So, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams you can sort of hold back if you believe Arizona is the bottom of the barrel. Wes, you weren't the only one who didn't do well last week. None of us did well on this podcast. Todd, what were the numbers?
The numbers were kind of ugly. Gilly with a 1-2 that leaves him at 3-3, which is still, you know, not bad. After his 2-1 in week one, I did a 1-2 because the Patriots couldn't get there in the backdoor scenario. So I'm at 2-3-1, and our new friend Will over here took what we call the bagel by going 0-3. Is that correct, Mr. Will? The Bears. You deserve a mulligan for that one. Denver, you deserve a win for that one. You didn't get it. And then the New York Jets, I'm sure you could say lots about them. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Will. What were you going
to
say?
Yeah, I was going to say, it seems like it was related to the technical issues because we had all these audio issues. My picks didn't go well, so there seems to be some sort of correlation between the two.
Adam Chernoff, who usually has big weeks on the Megapod, was only 1-2. Now, the good news is we all won all the teasers, because we all had Bills with Steelers and Adam had Bills with Niners. So the teasers were pretty much not a challenge when Deshaun Watson decided to give the Steelers 14 points. So that kind of worked out pretty well.
I'm looking for the picks from last week because I don't believe Todd that he went 1-2. I'm totally not believing Who? Todd.
Adam Chernoff? I'll tell you what he had.
What was your one win last week?
Oh, the Pittsburgh Steelers plus 2.5. I had the Pats plus 3 in Cincinnati.
No, you're right. I'm even doubting you for even a moment.
I have
Chernoff. I know you don't. Just double checking. Chernoff actually texted or DM'd me after the show, after the week, because he was so, he says when he's on the show, he's more nervous about his Megapod picks than anything he does at Right Angle Sports, because he wants to keep that streak alive. And so he went, what did you say he went? 1-2, or did he hit the teaser?
Mm-hmm.
And then he wanted special dispensation because he gave out the Thursday night over, was it? And then he was like, isn't that technically still a winning week? And you made the, so we went to the judge, which is obviously Todd Wishnev, judge and jury, court stenographer of this podcast. And you said, I think correctly, you could have picked the Thursday night game, right? As a best bet.
According to the Constitution, you're allowed three picks.
Right.
And right. A teaser, and if you like a Thursday night, you can use that, but you can't, there are no such thing as bonus picks. If there was that's such right. a thing as bonus picks, then we could of course do that, but you know, we can't just change the rules for Adam Chernoff. I love the guy, but I'm just saying.
Yeah, Constitution of this podcast was written in 1787, I believe, and we yes. adhere to it yes. by the letter.
By Pete Axthelm was one of the Pete Axthelm with a gray wig was one of the signatories along with Jimmy the Greek Snyder.
That is correct. That's absolutely correct. All right, Todd, do you have We're any before we get to Thursday Night Football?
The Continental Congress here.
Yeah. Yes, Federalist Papers, the whole thing, Wes. Whole
yes.
thing. Podcast has been going on forever.
Will, I hope before you know, we just, do it. I was just giving you the business about that 0-3. I'm sure I'll have an 0-3 and you can give me the business too.
Oh, I mean, come on. It's part of it. I've been giving myself the business. Anytime you go 0-3, it hurts. And boy, to make matters worse, I actually had a Bears +3.5 in pocket and I bought back on Bucks on a cheap money, like -137. I'm sitting there +3 with the ball, you know, Tampa was like another first down or so from just kneeling it out. And it's funny, the Bears got a first down that pushed them out to like the 25 because they were on their own like 5, and that makes you nervous whether a sack or a Fields pick. Once they got out to the 25, it felt okay, but it came back with offensive pass interference. Then I was like, uh-oh, they're sitting on their own goal line. Nothing good's going to happen here. And Fields, for whatever, refused to run, and the rest is history.
And then they throw a middle screen backed up in their own end zone.
I believe what it sounded like was this. Fields back to pass from the 7. He's at his own goal line. He throws the ball. It's tipped in the air. Somebody on Tampa has it. There's a massive humanity at the 2-yard line. What's going to happen? It looks like it's a touchdown. Will Hill get the old gangster shot? Poor guy.
Breath is going out of you. It was Shaq Barrett, by the way, was the Tampa guy. Yeah, who just got just rugbyed into the end zone. And by the way, the Bears, just before this podcast yesterday, we do this on Thursday morning, no more defensive coordinator, and Justin Fields went full, I'm a robot because of my coaches, on his coaches. And now I guess they still have Nathan Peterman as their guy. Like he was rumored to be leaving, but now he's still there. It's a whole thing. That was, remember what I asked? What did he say, Wes, exactly?
Yeah, he was like, oh, I just wanted to clarify my comments. He went and got the reporter gaggle in the locker room, you know, to say, you know, hey, it's on me too to take responsibility. But it is that old like political strategist or pundit line. If you're explaining, you're losing. And, you know, I think Justin Fields very much found that out yesterday.
If you're explaining, you're losing. That was when I asked, I think it was the Megapod preview, but I asked it on a numbers game too, maybe not with you guys, but it was, what's the narrative in the off season that you find people have that you just can't buy into before the season actually started? And the Bears being good by a lot of people was one of them. It's just like, why are we so convinced the Bears are going to be good? I have Eberflus first coach fired. I am at 15, north of 15-1. He is +150 now. Can I win something? God damn it. Sorry, getting a little heated.
You know, rooting for another person to lose their job is kind of bad karma though, Gilly, isn't it?
No, that's true. Not kind that's of. A good point. I didn't even think about that. It's like my buddy who he had Nick Chubb on two of his fantasy teams, and he's such a crybaby, excuse me. And he goes to his commissioner. He goes, I'm out. I'm not playing fantasy anymore. I'm done with this. I put in too much and I get nothing back. I'm like, do you know that Nick Chubb's career might be over? Does that matter at all to you? No.
How about this? And this isn't talking out of school because it aired on the podcast, the Bear Bets podcast, earlier, the one we recorded. I guess it's going to be the one for the NFL, but Felica was talking about Nick Chubb's injuries. Like, man, for anyone that saw that, just horrible, just a horrible injury for any of us with Browns tickets. I thought he was going to say horrible news for Chubb, who just snapped his leg. He's like, horrible for our Browns tickets. Such a somber
tone. That's great. We are all callous, horrible human beings. What's your line, Todd? Human beings, worst invention ever.
I have a great in-game discussion to have with you guys real quick, yes, if you want to do that, please, right now, like we usually do.
Go ahead.
Okay. So, yep. So last week, the Rams were playing the 49ers. The score was 10-10, probably maybe 5, 6, 7 minutes left in the first half. I took the over 50.5 because I thought, oh, the Rams can move the ball here, and we know the Niners are going to move the ball, so I'll take over 50.5. And I got 2 touchdowns before the half. I was looking great. It was 34 already, 17 all at the half. So I only need 16.5 in the second half to win because I got over 50.5. I'm like thinking, oh, this is amazing. So now it fast forward to 7 minutes to go in the game, and the score is 27-20, and the Niners have the ball on their own side of the field. So basically, I need 3.5 points still, and I'm like, uh-oh, how am I going to get 3.5 points when the Niners have the ball with 7 minutes? There's a good chance the Niners will just get first down after first down after first down after first down, and maybe they might get into field goal range at the end, but still, they could theoretically just, you know, grind this thing down and win 30-20, and I lose by a hook. So I was nervous, and I took the under 53.5, which is 6.5 more points, which means if somebody gets a touchdown, I screw myself because then I would have had a 1-0 and I turned it into a 1-1. But I was more worried that we would have a long, prolonged Niner drive to end the game. So I said, you know what? I'm not going to chance it. I'm going to take the under 53.5. Maybe I'll hit the middle. I get over 50.5 and under 53.5, 2 field goals, and I win it, right? So, of course, the Niners get their field goal, even though they didn't go on a long drive, but they got, I think, a turnover. They ended up with the field goal at 30-20. So now I just needed the old backdoor field goal action. And then here come the Rams down the field. They're driving. And I'm like, guys, it's time to kick the damn field goal. What are you doing? You're still running plays. And then they ran the play with 5 seconds left, came up and spiked the ball, kicked the field goal. It lands 30-23, and I middled. But the point of the thing is not that I hit them both, and that was a beautiful thing that happened, and I totally obviously did not deserve it. But the point is sometimes you want to get off your in-game bet if you just don't like the smell of it. And I didn't like the smell of it, and I didn't deserve to win it. So I actually made the right decision, and it turned out I hit the middle. But it was the smart move to get off of that bet because I just didn't see more than 6.5 points being scored.
Okay, I have 2 follow-ups to that. One is, what percentage of bettors, complete speculation, what percentage of bettors do you think when they have a position and they're feeling a little iffy about it as it develops, actually go ahead and take themselves off of that position for fear of, oh, they cost themselves the win? They might cost themselves the win that they would have had. I think it's not a lot.
I get very scared to do it too, because then I kick myself because I turn a 1-0 into a 1-1. That's what drives you crazy.
Yeah.
But the reason I did it was I could get off with still having a middle, and I didn't like my bet anymore. I didn't think with 7 minutes left, and then no, if the Rams had the ball, maybe, but with the Niners with the ball there, I just didn't like my bet anymore. There was obviously a great chance the Niners could just grind out the clock.
No, I totally get it. I'm glad you brought it up. But I think when we talk about it, we often talk about it in retrospect, and which you're doing right now, which is, you know, oftentimes the only time we can talk about it because you can't anticipate these things. But like the ability to do that in the moment, I think we kind of gloss over how difficult that actually is. Will, what percentage would you even put on that for like people who actually go ahead and do that?
So let me just so I understand, I have a bet. I'm afraid I'm going to lose, so I get off of it. How many people actually get off the bet?
Meaning you still have, while doing that, right, you would do it, but you have a voice in your brain going, yeah, but you know, I still might win this bet, and now I just might be killing my original bet.
Probably less than 10%.
I agree. It's hard, right? It's hard. Yes. That's where like the Go ahead, Todd. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I agree. I used to not ever do it also because of that exact reason. I didn't want to turn a 1-0 into a 1-1. But as I've gotten more and more, you know, sophisticated with my in-game betting, I've started to think, you know what? Would I make this bet right now? If it was 27-20 with 7 minutes left and the Niners had the ball on their side of the field, would I want over 50.5? I don't want it. I don't want that bet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So if I don't want it, I can get a-
I guess what I'm saying is it's a really good skill to develop because it's really harder, easier said than done, right? It's like hard to do that in the moment. The obvious second follow-up to this is something that was huge this week all over sort of the gambling verse. Even if you went to TikTok, you saw videos on this, like it was a whole thing. And like many things, Will and I sort of see eye to eye on this, was the Rams down 2 scores at the end. And with no time left on the clock, you know, just a few seconds left on the clock, they go ahead and they kick the field goal, which, again, they needed 2 scores. And, of course, the spread was 7.5, and they go ahead and they kick the field goal, and they end up covering, even though there was no point in that to winning an actual football game. And so everybody in the gambling world goes crazy because they think, clearly, Sean McVay, one of two things, Sean McVay clearly knew the point spread, or two, he was doing it for tiebreaker purposes, which is just the most ridiculous thing ever because it's like the seventh tiebreaker, right? So everybody's going crazy. We're super close to the sun on this. We're all betting. We're all gamblers. And so the conspiracy folks immediately, oh, he knew the spread. I won't speak for Will. Will can speak for himself. But I propose a third option, which is he just botched it. Like, he knew he needed 2 scores. He, you know, maybe he hasn't played Madden as much as you and I have. Maybe he hasn't watched as much football as you and I. And he's thinking to himself, you know, he's calling plays, the clock is running down, he's trying to get to a certain point downfield. Anyway, he just screwed it up. This is my opinion, a third option on this. And he just went ahead with the field goal anyway, and it was this kind of brain-dead thing. And I think that people who immediately rush to a conspiracy like he knew the point spread are the same people who relish Monday morning on Guessing Lines when we're talking about all these gaffes all these coaches make, like, oh, this guy's an idiot, he does this, he does that. But they're the same people who are so quick to be like, he clearly knew the point spread. He knew exactly what he was doing. And Todd and Wes, Will, is that kind of how you feel about it?
Yes. I think he had in mind, and look, he screwed it up. I'm not defending he screwed up, but from the point of 4 seconds on, I just think it was, we see this in basketball where a team is trying to foul and the other team gets a breakaway. Sometimes they dunk the ball. Sometimes they just pull it out. There's no rhyme or reason. I just think his intention the whole time was to kick the field goal. Let me get close and kick the field goal. He doesn't have a great kicker in Marr. He ran out of time. He didn't get close enough. He tried to get closer. They didn't have any timeouts, and there was 4 seconds left. He said, you know what? What the hell? I'll just kick it anyway. And there's not – it's not – it's very unlikely that you're going to kick it and have time for an onside kick, but maybe you get a clock operator with a fat finger, and with 4 seconds left, if he's slow to start it, you get it in, and there's 1 second left. Is it a 1% chance? Maybe, but that's still better than nothing. So, again, I think we're putting much more thought into it than he put into it, and – I mean, you could kill any decision there, because if he throws the ball in the end zone, which I know a lot of people want him to do, and Stafford, who's old, who's injury prone, gets hurt and breaks a rib, people
say,
you're playing the Niners. Yep. You get your quarterback hurt for no reason. Okay, maybe I should just take a knee since the game is over, according to some people, which, I mean, it is. Okay, if you take a knee, the same people are going to say, oh, he purposely didn't cover the spread. He could have kicked the field goal, could have thrown the ball. So I think we're putting way more thought into it than he did. I think he screwed up the clock, but it was nothing nefarious.
So now, as you and I are saying this, it occurs to me that a large percentage of the audience is going to be like, you guys are the most naive people in the world. Wes, where do you stand on it?
Well, I mean, I just think it's just NFL thinking, which is different than college football thinking, because there was an example over the weekend that I was involved with Ole Miss and Georgia Tech, where Georgia Tech gets back inside the number. There's about a minute left to go. Ole Miss has the football, and they're running zone read. You know, this isn't – nobody takes a knee anymore. We saw that with, like, James Franklin at Penn State against West Virginia. Nobody takes a knee anymore. They're still running plays, tempo, 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 and running plays. And obviously there's the incentive baked in for them to do that in the fact that, you know, you have college football playoff rankings. Margin of victory can really matter. You know, this isn't like the tiebreaker scenario that you brought up, Gil, where this is like the seventh tiebreaker. It's a different thinking all together here, really, with the NFL, where NFL is more conventional and traditional thinking, and college is like, no, we got to run it up on these guys, and every little point is going to matter in terms of these little computer rankings and when this committee gets together for the playoff.
I was just going to say quickly, I'm curious what you guys think, or if you guys know the answer. I meant to look it up, and I forgot to. If let's just say that the 49ers go offsides, the field goal is good. Do you get an onside kick, and you get to keep continuing the game with zeros on the clock, or you only get the onside kick? Like, I mean, it's a stretch, roughing the kicker, some sort of defensive penalty, but maybe, I mean, who knows?
That's a great question, but I don't know.
In the college game, Wes, they didn't even try to tackle the guy either. That was some very suspicious nonsense. I've never seen the defense just stop trying to not tackle the guy. I'm like, are you serious? Like, what are we doing here? This looks like out of the video when they take the kid who never gets to play and he's got like autism or something, and they bring him up and let him shoot a basket, and everyone goes, oh, that was so beautiful. That's what it kind of looked like on that last play. I was like, what are they doing here? Are we still playing, or we did? That was ridiculous, that college game.
No, these were scholarship players. Spencer Sanders, the backup, was in for Ole Miss, and you know, Lane always knows the number. It just seems like Lane is somebody. I don't think McVay does, but I think Lane always knows the number.
It's not for NFL. In the college, all the boosters are betting on the team. They want to cover the spread. And Gilly, I couldn't agree with you more about what happened with Mr. McVay. He wanted to kick the field goal the play before, but he was thinking, well, maybe I can just get one more chance. I believe they threw it in the end zone, maybe like a play or two before that. And he was like, oh, maybe I'll just go a little bit closer, and then I'll kick the field goal. You know, you could see it was going through his head that they were going to kick the field goal. So all these people with their stupidity, like, oh, this is what happened. Watch a million games. You'll see them come down and kick the backdoor field goal, which, by the way, brings up another point. Carolina against the Saints, we're down 11, and they're coming down. They might also try the backdoor action. And they were plus 10.5, plus 240 before that drive. And the only reason I didn't do it is because I already had some other position on Carolina. But I was thinking, is Carolina so bad that they can't even get the backdoor field goal? Well, no, they're not. They're good enough not only to get the backdoor field goal, they can get the backdoor touchdown. So people in the NFL, when the game is over, the defense stops trying. The offense will just keep dinking it underneath. And there's going to be a field goal if they're down 10 or down 11 very, very often.
Two more quick things on this, if I could. I was watching the game live, like I'm sure a lot of us were. I thought he was 50-50 to kick it, maybe even 60-40 to kick it. I wasn't like, my socks didn't get knocked off that he kicked it. I was kind of expecting him to kick it. And maybe he just wanted another rep from his kicker. He doesn't have a great kicker. There's a famous story about Adam Vinatieri, who made all these, you know, kicks to win Super Bowls. I think he said once one of the biggest kicks of his career was a 35-0 game against the Arizona Cardinals, where he was struggling. He was a rookie, and Parcells sent him out to kick a field goal and pulled him aside and said, kid, you better make this. And he made it, and he might not have been on the team the next day if he missed it. So sometimes these guys are just trying to get a look at their kicker. Who knows?
I could tell Joe Pita's kicking story right now if you want me to. Will.
How long is this podcast?
You know, it's good.
That was a good story.
It was an excellent story. Todd, are we doing the Yom Kippur gambling story on this, or are we doing it Tuesday on the Numbers game? What are we doing?
Today to do it.
Okay.
We're already,
Greatest gambling story of all time, Tuesday on the Numbers game, which is the day after Yom Kippur, is the Yom Kippur Massacre, Todd Wishnev gambling story. It's the greatest
gambling story ever. It's the greatest story, period, in the world. Not even gambling related.
Greatest story
of all time. Take all the stories that have ever happened in the world, it even is better than those.
Right. So, like, everything biblical, you know, classics of literature, not as good. Not as good as this.
Definitely.
Forward to it. How's that for a tease?
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means.
Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, best bets. Wes, we start with you. What do you got?
Okay. Sides, totals,
sides or totals? Sides or totals.
No. You can pick any side, any total, and no Indiana Hoosier game.
Okay. No Indiana Hoosier game, no team totals.
You don't have to worry about that. So I'll go with my first one here. And we are going to go. I'm just looking to see which number is the most widely available. And I'm seeing a lot of eights out there. There's plenty of eights out here. There are some 7.5s. No Indiana Hoosier game, but an Indianapolis Colts game. We are going to go with the Indianapolis Colts +8 against the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore off that divisional road win against Cincinnati. They're 2-0 straight up, 2-0 ATS. Credit Baltimore. You know, they did get the win without two of their main offensive linemen. Actually, their two best offensive linemen, Ronnie Stanley, Lindebaum as well out, and they may not be back for this one. Baltimore has a lot of cluster injuries here. They've lost a starting corner. They've lost a safety. They lost their slot corner, who aren't going to go this week. That not only adds to J.K. Dobbins already being out, and Odell Beckham may miss, Owe may miss. So a lot of injuries here for Baltimore, and they also have Cleveland next week. This just strikes me as a little flat spot maybe for Baltimore here, because I give them credit for their wins, but they did play Houston. Houston having not only a rookie quarterback on the road, but behind an offensive line that had four starters out. So you got to keep that in mind. And they played Cincinnati, where Joe Burrow, I think you could tell he is not near 100%. So Baltimore, as an underdog, obviously they are terrific. But as a favorite, and actually I believe as a favorite, Lamar Jackson in his career, I was seeing 7-14 against the number. So kind of a big number for Baltimore. I understand if people want to use them in teasers, but I think this number's a little high. You're not seeing the drop-off, really. The market is reacting the same, whether it is Anthony Richardson or whether it is Gardner Minshew at quarterback. Richardson, as of Wednesday, had not practiced. I don't expect that he is going to Gardner Minshew. So I am going to be on Indianapolis +8. I think they've been improved. They're not great by any means, but the offensive line is not the disaster it was last year. They've played a little bit better. Zach Moss clearly was an upgrade over Deion Jackson in terms of running back. He's no Jonathan Taylor, but at least the Colts were competent running the ball against Houston, which they were not against Jacksonville. So I just thought this number was kind of a sell high spot on Baltimore, at least temporary. Colts +8 for me.
We're going to give you 9. I see 9 everywhere, guys. Do you guys see 9?
I give him a, I'm looking at I'm seeing 9s and 8.5. I even see,
I
would
give
say
you 9.
8.5 is consensus.
Okay. 8.5.
Okay.
We'll give you
I actually see a 9.5 with plus money. So it's all over the place, kind of on my board.
So we'll give him 8.5.
Whatever you want. 8.5. He gets 8.5.
Give him a field goal.
I like how Wes, as soon as you said no Indiana Hoosiers, he came right back with the Indianapolis Colts. He's like, I'll show you. Will, let's go to you next, because we have the...
8.5 is a bigger number than people realize now with these games landing on 11. 8.5 is, 8.5 is not as, like, unusual.
Not because of the whole... not as dead a number as it used to be. Because of the whole two-point Michigas, is that what you're saying?
A lot of games are down 11 and they come down and they kick the field goal like we were just talking about.
Right. But that's all based on a lot of two-point conversion stuff, right?
Yeah, of course.
Is what you're really getting at. Yeah. All right. Wes, because since we have it on the four shot here, it's only fair to go in order here. What do you got, Will?
Yeah, I might go back and take Wes's pick, but I'll start with something different. I'm going to lay the 3 with the Detroit Lions. I know they're beat up, but this just feels like the pendulum has swung too far. I think we all agreed last week. I don't know why this ended up being one of my picks. I think the pendulum swung too far last week with the Seattle game where, hey, they shouldn't have been 6-point favorites. I think we talked about that either on a numbers game or on this. But I think it swung a little too much the other way now where, I mean, you're basically saying these are fairly even teams. And Ritter did not show me a ton. I know he's been great at home, but let's see him on the road here. Detroit is a little better on defense than they've been. They're still not great against the pass, but Atlanta's not the team that's really going to expose that. Kind of a must, not a must-win game here, especially in that division. I mean, they're 1-1, but you really don't want to lose two in a row at home. If you look at the Seattle game last week, they outgained Seattle in terms of yards per play pretty significantly. If they won the coin toss, they probably would have won the game. They were -3 in turnovers. This is an overreaction. I'll lay the 3 with the Detroit Lions.
I'm going to step in here, Todd, because that is based on guessing lines on Monday. That is absolutely my first pick as well. I guess on Monday that Detroit would be a 7-point favorite over the Atlanta Falcons, the 2-0 Atlanta Falcons. And it's exactly, and by the way, on guessing lines on Monday, it was like 4, 4.5. And then by the time we left the show, it was 3.5. And then we're like, it can't possibly get to 3. 3. 3 is everywhere.
Right.
It's exactly what Will just said. The reason that I was giving was, again, the it's amazing the power of recency bias. So all offseason, everybody's like, oh, Seattle, they might be the 4th best team outside of the Cowboys, Eagles, and Niners, whatever order those three are in the NFC. Then they get crushed by the Rams. And all it takes is 1 week for them to be these huge dogs against the Detroit Lions. Such an overreaction. Then Seattle goes in and beats Detroit. How is this not more than 3? Because Detroit was the other team that people were like, oh, they should be the 4th best team in the NFC. And all of a sudden, they're only 3-point home favorites against the Falcons. Detroit.
They didn't really win the game either. Detroit gave them the game with those turnovers, too. Right. So that's the other thing. I really like your guys' pick. That was one of mine that I was thinking about very, very highly. I'm going to go with my first pick being under 43 on Yom Kippur night for the Vegas and Pittsburgh game. The Pittsburgh Steelers, I don't know if Jens watched that game, but you know how many out of that 26 we really deserved in that? Barely 6. One touchdown on the first play of the game, on interception in that. Then we get the fumble on the last play, you know, down at the end of the game. That's 14. Then we get a Pickens over the middle that should not have gone for about 80 yards. That was another miracle in that. So we basically won that game with what you call the smoke and mirrors Tomlin action. That's called smoke and mirrors. We didn't deserve it. We deserved maybe 6 to 9 points in the game. We win the game 26-20. And, I mean, Jens can have a gigantic meal and celebrate. But let me tell Jens, we didn't deserve it. So now you're going to tell me we're going to go down to Vegas and we're going to score a ton of points? I don't see it. I think our defense is satisfactory to hold down the Las Vegas Garoppolos or whatever they're called now. And I think the Pittsburgh Steelers have no offense. Give me under 43 in the desert.
In the desert. What in mirrors was it? What in mirrors?
Smoke and mirrors in that. Smoke and mirrors.
Smoke and mirrors. I would have, number two, if this were earlier in the week, would have been my guessing lines call on the Seahawks. But now that spread is probably where it ought to have been very much at the beginning of the week, in that game between the Seahawks and the Panthers. So my number two is going to be the New England Patriots. What is the line there, Todd? 2.5?
Pats is 2.5.
You're laying 7.
Jets. 2.5 is what I say. I'm taking the Patriots. Patriots lose to the Eagles, lose to the Dolphins. Two home losses that, quite frankly, certainly a game against the Eagles, they had every shot in the world to win that game. Maybe not against the Dolphins, but they made it interesting anyway towards the end of that game. I think this is the game where they take out all their frustration. Bill Belichick does. I think Bill Belichick against Zach Wilson is the mismatch that we've all been waiting for. Belichick will fluster this guy. He will be under duress the entire football game. There's no chance the Patriots are going to go 0-3 here. And I think the Jets, I think this is the game where the Jets start to then, like the whole, oh, when Aaron Rodgers goes down, we need to pick up a veteran quarterback to be on this roster without Zach Wilson, which was a story I wasn't nearly as interested in as a lot of people were. But I think this is the sort of drives home the point. Wow, are you really going to let down the defense that you have, this great defense with Zach Wilson? And Belichick will expose that. I think the Patriots win. I think they win it by a couple scores at least. Patriots on the road at the Jets. My second pick.
So like team total Jets, you would love under team total Jets, right? Because there's probably,
yes.
I don't
yes,
know,
I
didn't look at the number, but it's probably, you know, somewhere in the 15-16 range.
Todd, go ahead because we're snaking.
Okay. My second pick is going to be similar to what you guys were talking about, similar theory. I'm going to go with the Cincinnati Bengals. I know they stink. I know they're all injured and everything, but this is the season, folks. I believe, are the Cincinnati Bengals 0-2 now? I believe they are.
They're yes, 0-2. They are. Yes, they are.
And now they're home against a Rams team. Now, granted, the Rams have surprised, and I was always wondering why everyone was so down in the Rams with Stafford coming back to play quarterback, because I do believe he was a Super Bowl quarterback only a couple years ago. So I was wondering why everyone was so down in the Rams. But anyways, I just think that if the Cincinnati is going to have ever have a performance where the entire kitchen sink is thrown in, they've got to do it this week, because if they lose this week, it's 0-3 and the season's over. So basically, this is it for Cincinnati. They're at home. I know the Rams have looked better. You know, Joe Burrow, you know, unless you want to write off 2023, I'm taking Cincinnati -3.
By the way, what's Burrow's status right now? Do we know?
There was just a tweet from Schefter that he's not practicing. If he does practice, it won't be in full, and it's very much in doubt for Monday. So a whole lot of nothing. Market seemed to think the best play. This thing got down to one or so.
Who's Cincinnati's backup?
Marcus. Wait, you said Market seems to think that he's not playing. Yeah, Jake
Market
Browning
seemed to think
guy.
He wasn't playing. When it got down to one, it's like, boy, yeah. You don't go from 7-1 if there's uncertainty. There's certainly somebody thinks or they know something at least regarding Burrow. But if we're getting it back
Can
up
I
to three, we're at least in that
now?
Point where the market doesn't know.
I was just going to say, shut. Then we can all switch to a shot of Todd on Monday night when Jake Browning is behind center. Can I get off my pick now? That's your second funniest comment of the day. Do you know what your first one was? I didn't want to seize on it because it was like in poor taste, but your image that you gave of what that Ole Miss final play was, it's just spectacular.
But it
all
was
right,
so,
Will,
it was so true. Nobody was trying.
Yeah, I know, but it was just so politically incorrect, but it just everybody knows exactly what you're talking about by image. So it had me dying. All right, Will, number two.
You know, I'm scanning the board here, and I'm gonna call an audible, just sort of an impulse here. I'm going to lay the 12 with Dallas or 12 and a half. I'm seeing a couple of 12s. We'll call it 12 and a half. That's
I
okay.
see 12 and a half.
That's
12 and a
half. Me.
12 and a half, yep.
I mean, laying this many points on the road, usually not my nature, but this really isn't going to be a road game. It's going to be all Cowboy fans. I'm sure they're going to be up by 17 or 20 at some point. Like Todd says, you always have to worry about the back door in the NFL, but I don't know. You're really worried about the back door with this Dallas defense against this Arizona offense. To me, this has like, you know, 34-10 written all over it. I think Dallas wins. I think they win going away. Arizona's been competitive the first couple of weeks. Hey, they could easily be 2-0 straight up. They're not going to be competitive this week. Dallas wins going away.
We should have a sounder at that moment. It's your square ball pick of the week.
It is.
But I think you're right. I think it probably happens that way.
Josh Dobbs down 19 at the 19-yard line, 30 seconds to go,
right.
First and 10 at the Cowboy 19. He throws it in the end zone. The ball's tipped in it. Arizona covers. Wow, they win it. Only losing.
Or it's one of these games where I didn't realize it started, and so I get a text message. How is it 14-0 Arizona? And I see my, what? 14-0 Arizona?
All right, Wes, two from you, sir. Your second and your third.
Oh, okay, and I played side and total both on this, but I'll just give out the total. And Todd kind of tipped my hand here, and that is the Raiders and the Steelers under the total for Sunday Night Football. If you really look, I'm going to give you three guesses, and the first two don't count. How many plays did the Steelers run in the Browns' red zone on Monday Night Football last week?
Zero.
Zero.
I got a follow-up question. How many did they run inside the 30? Zero.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. Cause they had that drive where they got to the 31 for the field goal. Cause,
that's right.
You know, this Steelers offense is very outdated. And, you know, Matt Canada certainly deserves a lot of the grief, but, you know, Mike Tomlin does too for sticking with him. And also Kenny Pickett does. You know, they were never in the red zone. Last week, the Steelers got 26 points and they had 9 first downs the entire game. That's very hard to do, but they figured out a way to do it. But nevertheless, they won the game. Now they go play a Raiders team that, oh, by the way, bottom four in terms of pace in the league. They're really not running a lot of tempo here. I think they're 29th in seconds per play. We know that you know, they scored on that first drive up in Buffalo, and then they did hardly anything the rest of the game. Part of that was that Adams got hurt and had to leave with concussion to be examined for that. But I just look at the fact that, you know, the Raiders are kind of still trying to figure out who they are offensively. Jacobs has not been running the ball well. They haven't been able to run the ball at all. And I think this is going to be a low-scoring game. Now, I did lay some money line also with the Raiders here. I think that this could be a decent spot for him. Pittsburgh off that kind of really fraudulent win. I was not impressed with that win at all. The Raiders, I'm not going to look too much into last week against Buffalo because that was an absolutely terrible spot for the Raiders. Two road games in a row. You had to go to the – you went to the Greenbrier, obviously, and stayed on the – you know, the East Coast to eliminate the travel. But when you're away for 2 weeks and you have long trips away, you kind of wear out a little bit. And I think they were running into a buzzsaw with Buffalo just because Buffalo lost on Monday night. And all of a sudden, you know, everybody reacts on the social media. Hey, Josh Allen, he just can't play anymore, right? He's totally washed up when he's still like one of the top five quarterbacks in the National Football League. So under 43 for me in Raiders and Pittsburgh, and you say I have another one to go right now, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Wait, before you give your second one, I believe a key factor we have to look at is teams now that stay at the Greenbrier between road games are now 2-9, which is a huge, yeah. Who knows what's going on down at that resort, but what I've heard is the egg white omelets are not satisfactory. Continue, Wes.
Isn't the Greenbrier, well, first of all, is it the Greenbrier or the Homestead, right? Isn't it the other, like, posh, waspy
right
place
right
stay,
I
like
think
West
they were
Virginia.
At the Greenbrier down in West Virginia, and yeah, look, all of a sudden you stay in a nice resort like that, you know, maybe you lose your edge. Maybe there is something to do that you lose your edge.
West,
you know,
West,
instead
West.
Of
nice resort West Virginia do not go together, but good call.
Greenbrier, by the way, is the one where they have a presidential bunker underground. Little historical note, so like when we have like 9/11 or any like big crisis, like the president goes underground at the Greenbrier a lot of times, or congressmen do, something like that. Anyway, that's all I know about the Greenbrier. And that's a 2-9 apparently when football teams stay there. I love that. 2-9.
I'm just kidding. I've never been to the Greenbrier. It might be a beautiful resort. I was just kidding about
West Virginia.
No, it
looks nice.
Yeah.
They used to have a PGA Tour.
Probably not going to be a sponsor going forward, but.
Wait, Wes, what did you say there? Yeah, no more sponsorship in the Greenbrier.
They used to have a PGA Tour event in that there. Now it's a part of LIV. I think LIV goes there to play at the Greenbrier. It's a pretty easy course from that standpoint, but it looks like a nice resort.
Oh, I have some breaking LIV news, Wes, that I don't know if you know or not, that apparently they're trying to do a golf tournament in Vegas the same week of the Waste Management leading up to the Super Bowl. Do you know this?
I did not know this.
Yeah, it's breaking news in my – a little birdie told me this morning. The little birdie's name is Bill Krakenberger, so I don't know.
Okay.
No.
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I mean, nobody knows what that deal is going to end up being, so I'll just keep betting tournaments, Gil, and let all the politics at the other side, I guess, in this game.
Yep.
But for pick number three, and this is going to be an ugly one, it's a smaller dog than my first one, but – pick number three for me. Obviously, you might be able to get a better number over the weekend, so you could wait on it. The Denver Broncos plus 6.5. I am going back to the Denver Broncos. This is and I know I'm going to get some disagreement here, and that's okay. I also like the over in this game, by the way, at 48. And one of the reasons why, obviously, we know how explosive Miami's offense is. Number one in the NFL in points per drive actually is the Denver Broncos so far through first 2 weeks. If you watch them against Washington last week, like, the script is amazing. Sean Payton has had a really good script, but all of a sudden, you know, when you get into the game and there's that, you know, some adjustments, Denver really kind of went into a shell after that. And I thought what really turned the game, they scored on their first three drives, mind you, it was 21-3. Russell Wilson running to midfield, kind of drops the ball, fumbles the ball, doesn't know where it is. The Commanders get it on a short field. I think it was right at the 50-yard line. And that really turned the tide of the game from that standpoint. But this is just like a really weird spot because we know, hey, the Miami Dolphins have won two games in a row on the road. Now they come for a home opener against a Denver team, by the way, that lost outright at home as favorites. Yet the line hadn't moved very much. You know, a little bit curious to me, the fact that it's been six and a half pretty much all week. Kind of an interesting trend here. And look, I always say make trends your acquaintances and not too much of your friends, you know, and that trends don't ultimately pay the rent, but you have to look at them in context. Underdogs in week three that are coming off a pair of straight up favorite losses, which the Denver Broncos are, 16-2-1 against the number over the last 20 years. So I thought that that was kind of interesting because you got a desperate team against a favorite that all of a sudden they're kind of feeling themselves a little bit. So I'm holding my nose here, and I can't believe I'm going back with this team as mad as I was at them on Sunday for knocking out a survivor entry, losing not only a bet, losing one of the million and the super contest plays that I also had on Denver. I was pretty strong on Denver last week, but you know, the NFL is about pain. And you have to bet it accordingly. You can't bet what you saw last. You have to, you know, kind of go and embrace that pain and embrace that stink, if you will. And I'm doing it with the Denver Broncos plus 6.5.
Yeah, I only groaned because Denver's killed me, but I like your reasoning, actually. And I think that Miami defense is so suspect. That's a very high total with a big spread, right? So
yeah. And to your point about the defense, too, look, it takes some time when you got a new defensive coordinator. I know Vic Fangio is one of the more experienced in the league, but you saw what the Chargers did to him. The Chargers went up and down the field, were really able to run the ball on him too. It wasn't necessarily Justin Herbert. It wasn't until Vic Fangio on that last drive kind of turned up the blitzing and then, you know, were able to stop Herbert and were able to sack him twice on that final drive. But, you know, as mad as I was, have been at Russell Wilson, he hasn't been bad. He's been better than what we've seen last year. And I like the fact that they were, you know, let him run the ball a little bit. I think that that adds something to the arsenal. Get him out of the pocket. I wish they would have done that more on the 2-point conversion on the last drive.
By the way, how does that not get flagged after the Hail Mary?
It was interference.
I mean, my God. And Washington, I said I was wrong about that game because I was like, Washington never goes in and wins a game like this. They were down 18, and I was like, oh, I'm a genius. I can't believe they came back and won that game. I can't believe they didn't get a flag. We never get that non-call. But Washington had a game against the Giants last year where Washington got screwed on the same kind of thing, so no one's apologizing.
You know what I thought? It was almost like the ref was like, you got one break with the Hail Mary. I'm not giving you another break here with the interference. The game's over. See you later.
Yeah. Plus, I have dinner reservations or something. I'm leaving. Right. I'm getting out of here. What's your last one,
Will?
That
game went long. I will go. I'll just piggyback on what Wes said about the Colts. No need to repeat a lot of it, but that's a lot of injuries to expect a team in a sandwich spot here to cover basically double digits. And, you know, 9's a dead number. So taking 8.5 with the Colts, I think it's a lot of points. Minshew, certainly serviceable. Baltimore all beat up. I will take the 8.5 with the Colts.
By the way, they were beat up last week, and that's why I went with Cincinnati. And for some reason, these teams that are all beat up sometimes can actually win. That's what I just don't know.
Your quarterback was beat up too, though. That's the thing.
No, I'm with you. And by the way, I understand the cluster injuries and everything. I just think that, like, I fell for that one last week with you know, Baltimore's all beat up, Cincinnati's going to be. Sometimes these coaches have a way of, you know,
right,
disguising the problems. Oh. And, you know, maybe they know they have some backups that are okay. Like, we always talk about these cluster injuries, but we never say, oh, well, what about the backup? Maybe the backup's okay. Maybe Harbaugh has a way of, you know, just shuffling the deck and figuring out how not to allow the cluster injuries to hurt him.
But I think it's the first week, though, because that actually I left a winner off last week because, you know, when these lines come out on Sunday and Dave Ross and I do the look ahead show on VSiN and we're looking at these numbers and I looked at like a spot. I was like, man, this is a home run spot for Seattle here. They lose at home. Detroit beats Kansas City on Thursday Night Football in the opener and they have a couple extra days off. Seattle had both their starting offensive tackles out. And I was like, oh, man, this is going to worry me, you know, having those tackles out. I think they gave up maybe one sack against Detroit. And Seattle, you know, was the right side the whole game. So there is something to that for a week. I think the coaches can do it. And I think it's more pronounced probably later in the season. It's more of an advantage to play against these cluster injuries. But that second week, it's a little bit tougher because for a week, like you said, Todd, you can scheme it. Like you can, you know, you can mask it a little bit. But then you get that second week, and then all of a sudden these injuries start to kind of, you know, really, really add up and you start to feel those effects.
Yeah, by the way, I'm not saying that.
We love Dave Ross.
I'm not saying, sorry, Gil.
What'd you say? No, that's okay. I was just making a comment about Dave Ross. I was just giving Dave Ross.
No, I'm not saying it's wrong to go against the cluster injuries. I just think sometimes we just like people don't discuss. Well, okay, yeah, I know they have cluster injuries, but what are they going to do about that? Well, what's the backup like? What's the scheme like? So I like your point about, well, in the first week they can get away with it. In the second week, all of a sudden it starts to show up. That's probably an excellent point.
Drew Bledsoe got hurt. Fade the Patriots.
Yeah, that's sort of a corollary, what Wes is talking about. That's sort of a corollary to the old Bill Simmons Ewing theory, right? Where like over a short period of time, you can mask it. But then long term, you know, not the same sort of thing. Cousin of that anyway. Todd, your turn. Sorry.
My pick, I mean, I just can't find anything that I really love here. I'm just going to go. I was going to go with Detroit -3.2, but I know that if we all pick the same thing, it's a guaranteed loser. So I'm not going to do that.
Pick a WNBA game.
Yeah, pick a WNBA game. I heard you're really good at that.
Well, you, by the way, if I give a WNBA game, go out, folks, get a mortgage, load the boat. Call your uncle, call your grandpa, call whoever you need to call, get all the money and take it the opposite of whatever I take with the WNBA. Because those
How
ladies,
did we lose that yesterday?
Those ladies have it out against me. They want to get me no matter what, including the damn, what is that team's name? The Lynx, somehow getting the over Lynx. 23.5 points in the last quarter when we had a dead nuts under when they're down 16. And a girl who never even shoots a three hits a three from freaking East Kabumbang, and they somehow go over our two
East
totals.
But
you East Kabumbang, is that near Duluth?
It is right by Duluth. What I appreciate about you, Todd, though, is that even through it all, you still refer to them as ladies, as you just did. I really appreciate
that. Well, when I'm on the text with Gil and Will, I'm probably the least misogynistic person in the world. But if you watched my texts for what I say against the WNBA ladies when they're screwing me, I am like from the Neanderthal era. I'm using the C word against them. I'm using the B word. I'm using.
Oh, dude, I was trying to save you.
Dude.
No, but I'm being honest about it. I don't really feel that way about these. It's sports misogyny, so it doesn't really count. It's just like sports hate. You don't want somebody to get injured, and you don't really hate these teams. But in sports, you're allowed to be like a Neanderthal. So I allow myself to be crazy when they're hitting threes from East Kabumbang on me. But anyways.
The previous podcast has been brought to you by the National Organization for Women.
That's right. I was trying to save him, and he like went all full in. I'm like, easy.
In real life, I'm extremely non-misogynistic, but in sports, we have to do certain things. It's not my fault. What do you want from me?
That was very Trumpish of you. In real, I'm the least person you've ever met, least misogynist person you've ever met.
No, I won't even go there. National Football League, I need a third pick here. And boy, this is just it's a tough week for me.
I'm with you because my third pick has shifted like four times during the stretch of this podcast.
Yep.
I mean, there's a part of me that wants to take the Bears just because who could possibly want to take the Bears? But I'm not going to be careful taking the Chiefs this week. There's no such thing as free money in the world, and it looks like free money. Just be careful.
Mahomes actually historically is a bad big favorite. If you really look at those numbers, I think 7-13-1 against the number as a double digit regular season favorite. Because the Chiefs slow down. Like the Chiefs really slow down. And they don't run up tempo, and you know they just kind of try to get through it. So you know maybe for Survivor, but I'm not laying 13. No way.
Yeah, you can't.
Mahomes likes to stick it to the Bears, and Nagy might want to stick it to the Bears too, though. That's one thing that makes it at least for me. I don't know.
Yeah.
There is that. Yeah.
I guess then I'm gonna go with the Cleve Brownies. -3. To me, the Cleve Brownies look real, the Cleve Brownies. I don't know if you ever heard of that team. That's a team that we in Pittsburgh, we kicked their ass all over the place. Anyways, the Cleve Brownies, they look good against the Bengals. Granted, the Bengals now we're thinking are not as good, but they won the game. They literally gave the game to the Pittsburgh Steelers as an early Christmas present because there is no universe that the Pittsburgh Steelers should have beaten them in that game. They literally handed them the game and said, here you go. Here's your Christmas present. And to me, they've got to be going back to the basics this week and saying, okay, look, we're at home. We're going to stop the nonsense. And we're going to win this football game. Now, they're going against Mr. Smoke and Mirrors Vrabel, who somehow finds a way to stay in these games. But can he do it every single week? Come on. This Tennessee offense, they're just not good. Every time they have the ball, you're just hoping, can you get me a couple first downs and then punt? You know, it's just they're not that good. Okay, so they scored some points against the Chargers. What does that even mean? Against the Saints, that was the true Tennessee offense. A 15-point game where they kick 1,000 field goals, where they're not explosive, they're not good on offense. And by the way, the Browns have been pretty good on defense, folks. You just said it. The Steelers ran how many plays from inside the 20? I would argue the Steelers ran zero offensive plays the whole game. But I'm saying they didn't run any offensive plays from inside the 20-yard line. This Cleveland defense may be pretty darn good. And now you're going against what I think is a below average Tennessee offense. So I only have to win the game by 3 points. Give me the Cleve Brownies in that.
Let me just jump in. I am seeing a lot of three and a halfs.
Yeah, it's starting to go to three and a half. I actually laid money line. I actually bet the Browns here, which I usually don't like to go against Tennessee considering I've been on them the first 2 weeks. Mike Vrabel, we know he's money as an underdog, but I think that this line's been discounted a little bit too much with the Chubb injury and people underestimate Cleveland's defense is actually really, really damn good. And I think Tennessee's got some problems on the offensive line, especially if Skoronski, the rookie, doesn't go. They're going to get a big time pass rush on Tennessee.
You get three, Todd. I think it's three extra juice.
Okay, so Tennessee team total under might be something you guys might, if you have access to Tennessee team total, if you can get over 17, you know, I don't know how they're going to score more than 17 against the Browns in Cleveland.
Yeah, you keep saying the Cleveland defense might be pretty good. They might be elite. They're awesome so far through 2 weeks.
Right. That's what I'm saying. I'm saying the worst you could say is they're pretty darn good.
Am I allowed to give a third pick where I have no real basis for giving it, but I just have I just know. You know, it's one of those things where it's like the Bill Maher thing. It's like I have no facts to back this up, but it's just you just know. Something like that. What do you think?
Is it kind of like
how that was kind of like my Denver pick, but I just BS'd it.
What did you say, Todd? What is it? Kind of feel how I feel about what?
Sort of how you know, like Jock Peterson is not on a real training regimen and instead eats a lot of potato kugel. Is that kind of the
very
same
similar?
Kind of, like we don't know for very sure, similar. But we look at his belly hanging over his pants, and we're saying Jock's eating a little more than you might think.
It's exactly like that. I am taking, get ready for the homer call. I'm taking the Washington taco holders plus, what am I getting, 6.5 there? What am I getting, 6?
The commander? Yeah. 6.5.
There's some 6.5 out there at plenty of stores.
All right, 6.5 it is. I'm taking Washington, not in my betting account yet, but I am taking Washington. I will have this by game time here, if not right after the show. At home against the Buffalo Bills. I know I said last week that Washington as a franchise, it doesn't matter if it's Joe Gibbs 1.0. It doesn't matter what generation. They don't go into an AFC opponent on the road and win that football game. And yet somehow down 18, they did last week. Maybe it's an Eric Bieniemy thing. Maybe it's not. We'll find out. This is one that they always keep close. They don't get blown out at home by the Buffalo Bills. And I think we're at this moment here where people are like, oh, Buffalo, they crushed the Raiders. They're exactly who we thought they were. Forget about week one. Oh, look, Washington, they were down 18. They're lucky to win that game against Denver. They're a Fugazi 2-0. I actually think this game's going to be a lot more competitive than people think. I don't know that Washington's going to win it outright, but good luck stopping the incomparable Terry McLaurin. I think Sam Howell has been okay. I think Eric Bieniemy is doing very well with him, and I think that defense, despite the fact that they started out giving up two big Russell Wilson to Mims Jr., big plays in that game against Denver, they're they're fairly solid. And up front, they're fairly solid. And I think that secondary is ball hawking. Give me 6.5. I'll take that. That's my third pick. Washington Commodores.
I like that pick too, Gilly, because the Bills are coming off the gigantic win. And in sports betting in general, it's we're kind of rare that teams just blow out the first team and then they come back the next game and blow out another team. It just doesn't really happen in sport. You know, whatever it is, even Gonzaga, who wins by 40 over, you know, South Clara or whatever, Santa Clara or some nonsense, they don't come back out and then blow out Loyola Marymount. It just doesn't typically happen in sports.
And in the NFL specifically, to your point, I mean, if you just took every home 6.5-point dog blindly, methinks you do pretty well in this league. Like, just blind, auto, brain dead play. And I think this one sets up nicely.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Teaser of the week, plenty of teaser options. Wes, what is your favorite two-team six-point teaser?
Yeah, I actually liked the teaser board a little bit better last week, but there are plenty of options, maybe a little bit more uncertainty, at least for me. When in doubt, I know it's 14-0, but when in doubt, when I've got a total as low as 36, and I can tease an underdog through 3-7. I'm going to do that probably every single time. So I'm going to tease the Jets up to 8.5. And I'm going to use it with the New Orleans Saints from 2-8 against Green Bay. And I was higher preseason on Green Bay than I was on New Orleans. I still feel that way. I still don't know what New Orleans is at 2-0. But I just think Green Bay, you know, they've had a couple offensive line injuries, even though Aaron Jones, apparently, as we record this on Thursday, is back in practice. They need him bad because A.J. Dillon is just not the guy. A.J. Dillon, like, runs into tacklers. He finds tacklers. He doesn't avoid tacklers like Aaron Jones does. So, you know, Green Bay, I still think that they're kind of figuring out. They had some injuries at receiver as well. So I think getting New Orleans above a touchdown is the way to go. So I'm going Saints and Jets with my teaser this week.
Where do you guys have the Packers at? Because I don't see them at 2. Do you guys see them at 2?
There's a couple out there. I think DK has it at 2. A couple offshores. Okay. If you want to go 7.5, that's fine.
Okay, we'll put you at 7.5. To be fair,
I'm with you though. God, I'm just looking offshore. It's all ones. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we can't just let Wes make a call on his own teaser. I'm sorry, Wes, but you have to go to the tribunal. We'll give him the tribunal. We'll give him the 7.
Yeah, there's like we'll 7, 8 books I see on the screen with 1.5. So let's go 7.5.
He sees 7 or 8. He sees 7 or 8.
We'll give him 7.
The man ain't lying. 7. All right. Will. Wilson Hilton.
We got enough 1.5s on the Chargers to include them at 1.5.
Let's see, Chargers. I see a lot of like Vikings 1, 1.5. What do you see, Gilly?
I'm seeing more ones than 1.5, though.
Okay, we'll give you +7.
I'm just looking offshore though. I'm not looking domestically, so maybe I should.
I see.
I think Circa is at 1.5 on Minnesota.
I say Bet365 and FanDuel with 1.5 too.
We'll give you the 7.5 with the LAC, okay. But I will just this game has a do not bet sticker on it, but go ahead, Will.
Yeah, I was like, are we still asking that question, which game you don't want to bet? It would be this one, Chargers-Vikings for me.
It's coming. It's coming.
I mean, I don't want to bet the side, but I mean, it's the Chargers and the Vikings. I think by law, this has to be a close game where somebody's got the ball down a field goal late and somebody misses a kick or something. I mean, 7.5 in this kind of game is a whole lot. Now, it's a high total. I prefer a lower scoring game, but I will tease the, pair the Chargers plus 7.5 with a game that I think is in perfect teaser range. The Steelers up to 8.5. I expect a close, low-scoring game. They played on, what was it, Christmas Eve last year, and it was an ugly, low-scoring game. I would expect a similar type of game. Steelers' defense will keep them in it. Their offense, nobody's going to pull away from anybody in that game. Raiders will probably be conservative. So Chargers plus 7.5, Steelers plus 8.5 for the teaser.
By the way, the Chargers last week had so many chances to win that football game against the Titans, and they just refused to, like, put their foot on the neck of the opponent. Like, oh, we got the ball. We're up a score with 6 minutes left. All we have to do is milk the clock. Nope, can't do that. Oh, we get the coin flip in overtime. We have every reason. Nope, 3 and out again, just like they did week one against the Dolphins when it mattered. Let me ask you this. If they lose this game and their bye is week 5, so they have this game at Minnesota and home Vegas, if they lose this game, will they fire Brandon Staley?
I'll say no, just because they should have fired him after Jacksonville. I think the owner's just too cheap. I mean, why would you let him back on the plane after that Jacksonville debacle?
Yeah, the Spanos is they have like what you would call their first nickel, basically. They do not like to spend money, and that would mean they'd have to fire Staley. That would mean they'd have to maybe look at firing Tom Telesco and, you know, making all those changes. And that's just not what the Chargers do. When is the last time the Chargers have had a big time coach?
I was actually playing golf at the Greenbrier with Alex Spanos last weekend. And he said, the reason I'm at the Greenbrier is I'm a little bit of a penny pincher. So I went to a West Virginia resort as opposed to like a real resort.
Excellent conversation that took place. What's your teaser, Todd?
My teaser is going to be, I'm going to go with the Seattle Seahawks down to a half. Seattle minus a half. I just think that this Carolina offense is just so god-awful. I've never seen an offense this bad. And I know Seattle's not great on defense, but I mean, come on. This Carolina offense, it might be worse than the Steelers. It is really just ugly, this Carolina offense. I mean, they can hand the ball off, but when that guy goes back to pass, you do not have any confidence that he can, you know, throw it for a completion. So I'll take Seattle minus a half. And because people have asked and they, you know, you have to give the people what they want, I will take
there we go.
As my second teaser team. That's right. Uh-oh. Because it's the Tua McDaniels. They're looking better than you ever thought. Oh, you might have thought Russell Wilson was better than Tua at one point in time. But now it's all over for Russell Wilson. Thank you, folks.
The best part of that is
Miami Dolphins to win the game minus a half.
Best part of that is you with your hand up holding a pen sort of dancing to it.
My lyrics weren't very, very solid this time because I really didn't know what to say. So I just had to jam some stuff in there. And two is a very difficult. Tagovailoa is tough on lyrics, you know.
Tagovailoa? Tagovailoa.
What'd you say the best part was?
I think the best part was all of it.
All of it. All of it. Jacksonville Jaguars, one leg for me, down to 2.5 from 8.5 against the Houston Texans. And for the third consecutive week, one to the bad, one to the good, the Pittsburgh Steelers up through the 3 and the 7. Haven't they been like a 2.5-point dog every week, this year so far? I believe so.
Yeah.
So Pittsburgh up through the 3 and the 7 against the Raiders. So Jacksonville, Pittsburgh for young Gil. Final two questions of the show, Wes. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Will. What was that?
Oh, I didn't say anything.
Was that you, Todd?
Oh, no. I was just going to say I can hear something in my head here. It's Raiders. Raiders with a 3-point lead here. Kenny Pickett at the 20-yard line of the Raiders. There's only 30 seconds to play. Pickett back to pass. Oh, he fumbled the football. It looks like the Raiders are going to take it the distance to win it by 10 and destroy the Pittsburgh Steelers teasers on Yom Kippur night. Oh, my God.
On Yom Kippur night. Hey, what did that Ole Miss thing remind you of again, Todd? I'm curious. I can't remember what you said.
Is that the autistic kid that gets the ball? You know, they put it in the...
He doesn't necessarily have to be autistic. It was just, they were just doing the guy at mitzvah, to use your Yom Kippur thought. You're doing him at mitzvah. The poor guy was going all the way downfield. I mean...
No, those are uplifting sports videos.
They're heartwarming.
That you see on Twitter.
That's right.
They're very heartwarming because the teams are saying, hey, let's let this kid who, you know, has some kind of challenge, let him score and feel good about himself. And it just, to me, I wasn't saying anything bad about that. I was just saying that play at Ole Miss game kind of looked like that.
I know what you're saying. All right, final two questions of each and every Megapod from its inception. And there are tons of choices this week for the first one. Which of the big favorites is the most likely to lose outright? I come to you from the future and I say, man, one of these teams, not only did they not cover, they lost, period. The choices are tonight, Thursday Night Football. Oh, we didn't even ask if we had a Thursday Night Football thought. Niners, 10.5-point home favorites against the Gigantes of New York. All the way then to Sunday, Jacksonville, 8.5-point favorites at home against the Houston Texans. I'm not going to throw in the 6-pointers because there's too many other options this week. Ravens, the Ravines, 8.5-point favorites at home against the Indianapolis Colts. The Dallas Cowboys, 12.5-point favorites on the road against the Arizona Cardinals. The Chiefs, 13-point home favorites at home against the Chi-Town Bears. One of those teams lost outright. Wes, who is it?
Baltimore Ravens for me, just because I just think that this is such kind of like a dead spot for these guys. In between winning a divisional road game at Cincinnati, and, you know, now with Cincinnati especially, who is kind of seen as your challenger, you know, Cincinnati, like Todd was saying, season's on the brink here. You know, you can't go 0-3. I think I saw some kind of stat that, like, when you have a team that has lost both their games, then they're 0-2 and both are division losses. No team has ever made the playoffs in that scenario. So you got Cincinnati kind of, you know, in some real trouble here if you're Baltimore. So, you know, is this where they kind of, you know, just mess around and leave a team in the game? And I think that that could very well happen this week.
Don't let the Ravens bring Owen right up from the practice squad. Just want to point that out. Best practice squad player in America. Little shout out for me. Okay, Baltimore is Wes's answer. Will?
Yeah, I don't hate Wes's answer. I took obviously the Colts plus the points for a lot of the same reasons. I'll be a little different. I'll say the Texans. I think it was right around a year to the date. I think it was last year. It was like a 13-6 game in Jacksonville where Jacksonville was a huge favorite. I think the Texans were winless and it was just a sleepy game. You know, it's not a great home field advantage for Jacksonville. Lawrence is really hot and cold. I mean, everyone's anointing him as this next generational talent. He's, you know, he has his moments, but I don't see it with him. I don't trust him. I will say the Texans, you know, division games are always a little tricky. I'll say the Texans have a fighting chance here.
So you're taking the Jaguars, or are you taking the Jaguars? Which one are you taking?
Jaguars.
Dad.
Will's scaring me because I'm using Jacksonville in my Survivor. But
I no, me totally, too. Me too. I'm I like, oh totally no, should see. I use it on two?
I could totally see Jacksonville like at the 8-yard line on third and goal, totally. Throwing it in the corner, totally. And the guy catches it. But guess what? Only 1 foot in the end zone. Have they gone over the rules with the Jacksonville receivers at this point? Because I think they led the league in most 1-footed catches in the end zone in any football game I've ever seen in my life. And it cost me because I had over 37, you know, from halftime in that game. But they
literally against the Chiefs.
They caught the ball with 1 foot in the end zone, I think on 4 different occasions, which was quite, you know, hurtful. But I hope you're going to be wrong about that, Will. But unfortunately, you're making very good points, and it's really scaring the shit out of me. So anyways, I'm going to go with the team to lose. I'm going to say the 49ers because you know why? Here's why. The 49ers can't possibly lose. It's impossible for the 49ers to lose this week. Impossible. There is no possible way the 49ers can lose to the Giants. Now, The Giants were losing 28-7 in the second half against the Arizona, and they were left for literal dead. And somehow they woke up. Now, granted, they have Saquon Barkley on one foot. By the way, Waller looks like a different person than, you know, if they told me, by the way, they swapped out Waller with a different Waller. He used to look so muscular and monstrous on the Raiders, and now he's in that Giants uniform. He looks like all skinny. I don't know what it is. Maybe Kelsey Plum's not feeding him proper protein after his workouts, but he does not look as strong as he looked when he was on the Raiders. But be that as it may, maybe the Giants can dable one out of their ass here and beat the Niners.
I'm going to say I'm going to use them in Survivor. I think Jacksonville is the right answer to the question. Like, if you're just asking I'm scaring myself, right? Because I'm going to have Jacksonville Survivor. But it's like, same. If you force me to pick one of those, right? You force me to pick one of those, which is what I'm doing to myself here. I think that's the franchise that I'm just the shakiest on. Like, Baltimore, to me, I know, like, people think, you know, with the injuries, they're just still so solid that I can see them done. But Jacksonville, I don't know, man. Like, what was that week one game? They barely won week one.
Jacksonville, by the way, had lost 9 in a row to Houston until late last season when Jacksonville went on the road and won 31-3.
Yeah.
I could just see myself with Jacksonville on Survivor Sunday, and I see like it's 13-10 Texans in the second half, in the second quarter. Oh, Jacksonville will take the lead. They're okay. They're only down 3, and then, you know, an interception or something. I could see it. I could just see it in my mind.
You know, I have Giants. I had Giants last week in the Survivor. And it was 28-7, and I was like, oh, that was a nice time to be in Survivor. And it reminded me of the when I had Baltimore in Survivor one year, and they had 17 seconds left with no timeouts from their own 20-yard line against Detroit. And then they got that 4th and 17, and then Tucker hit a 66-yard field goal.
I still think, like, of all the Survivor losses during the course of Circa Survivor years, that might be the most improbable win of all of them. Like, even coming back from 21, you still have the whole second half to do it, right? Or actually a little less than second half because they got up 28-7. But, like, remember mine where the Raiders against the Jets where Derek Carr hit the dude at the end? Like, that was unbelievable that one. But yours, for some reason, like the number of things that had to happen, the 4th and 17, the 66-yard, like, it's never been done before, right? Like, that's incredible, that game. That might be the win.
That ball. No, people don't even realize. Forget the 66-yard field goal. They had to make like 4th and 18 with no timeouts at 18 seconds, yeah. And they threw it to Hollywood Brown, and he somehow got a first down. It was like impossible.
But you need one of those. You need one or two of those to be. You know, you're going to have a lucky win at some point if you're going to survive.
Did any of you guys have Giants final... in Survivor? Did any of you guys have Giants in Survivor last week with me?
No.
Oh, okay.
Nope. Final question, because Wes has to run also. Which is a game you want no part of? You got to bet 15 of these on the side. You live in a bizarro world. You got to bet 15 of them. One game you want no part of. Wes, I think you said it already. What is it?
Yeah, Chargers, Minnesota. Highest total on the board, by the way, at 54. Minnesota hadn't been able to run the ball, but able to throw the ball pretty easily the first two games. The numbers Cousins putting up. Chargers, are they going to have Eckler back? That certainly would help their offense. And I thought you saw where they, like you mentioned earlier, they got really stagnant. When they were trying to run out the clock and couldn't run the ball. So Chargers-Vikings for me.
Chargers-Vikings. I couldn't agree more. I don't know if that's going to be mine, but that is a great pick. Will?
I don't trust Geno Smith. I don't know about Carolina, what their quarterback situation is. I don't see any need to be involved in this game. I mentioned Seattle is like a little bit of a contrarian survivor pick, but in terms of betting this game, thanks, but no thanks.
Dad.
I don't want any part of the Charger game either, but I will say this. If one team is ahead by a lot, let's say the Chargers go ahead by 18 or Minnesota goes ahead by 18, these are going to be amazing backdoor teams. So if you like the backdoor for whatever in life, in whatever you like, the backdoor, you're really going to like. And by the way, no judgments. You can do whatever you like to do. It's all your business. My point is if you like the backdoor, this is the game for you. Because if either of these teams is up big, it is a guarantee that the other team will come back and get backdoor touchdowns. It is a guarantee.
I have a cop-out answer to this question because right now as we sit here and do this Thursday morning, I think the correct answer is the Rams and the Bengals. We have no idea right now about that game, right? If Burrow's going or Burrow's not, three-point game. I don't even know if Burrow's going, what kind of Burrow we get. And I don't know how – he already wants to switch his pick. Yeah, I don't believe that's allowed. Yeah, once it's locked in, it's locked in. You're the court stenographer. You know the rules.
They'll win with, like, some joker quarterback. That's what's going to happen. That'll be hysterical.
Jake Browning, joker quarterback. Yeah, even if Burrow goes, I don't even know if I know about that game because I don't know how good the Rams actually are with a future offensive rookie of the year, Puka Nacua, with his 30 targets and 25 catches. Amazing. All right, I think that's it. I think we've done it. Wes Reynolds from VSiN Tonight, weeknights with Matt Heumann. Wes, appreciate it as always, man. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. Good to be with you guys.
Wes Reynolds, who, by the way, and we mean this from the beginning of the show, Wes knows more about detailed sports things, but detailed anything things, more than any other human being I know. What would you say besides sports? What would you say is your number one category of knowledge, Wes?
Oh, man, that's hard. But as you know, the devil is always in the details, Gil. I would probably say, you know, history, especially like political history, government stuff, also pop culture, a lot of specifically music from the 70s and the 80s. That's listening to all those retro AT40s on Sirius, Gil. So that has increased my knowledge.
I want a 30 for 30 on Wes Reynolds.
Oh, yeah.
You'd be bored to tears.
No, you wouldn't. Because, by the way, those AT40s remind you how, like, radio formats in the 70s just blended together.
Yeah.
So it's just like from Air Supply to Chic, right? Like nothing that you would ever catch in the 80s or 90s.
Maybe it's generational, but it used to be like you felt like you knew every song, even from like the obscure one-hit wonders. Now today, if I look at the top 40, the AT40 that Seacrest does, I'm like, I know maybe two artists on here. Like, it's like, okay, I know Taylor Swift. I know Drake, but who the hell are these people? I have no idea.
Yeah. Wes, I think we old, as they say. I think we old.
Yes.
Yeah. I think we're getting up there. Will, plug your stuff. Will, what do you got?
Bear Bets Podcast. And then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday, twitch.tv/GoBoys Network, Go Boys Discord, and I don't have to plug the Megapod because we're on the Megapod, but and then I'm on the numbers game every Wednesday morning, Lombardi Line. So VSiN, Go Boys, Bear Bets Podcast for Fox.
Does a lot. And by the way, Go Boys, guys, I'll give them a shout out on this Megapod as I did on ANG. $200 million paid out by FanDuel on the prop of every game in the early window and the late window, sort of the early morning window and the afternoon window, so not the night game on Sunday. Those two windows, that every game would have a made field goal. It was mispriced at FanDuel at 200-1. DraftKings, by comparison, had it at 30-1. Got bet as low as 130-1, but not any lower than that at FanDuel. FanDuel proudly announcing they had to pay out $200 million, and Goal Boys was a nice chunk of that. Very nice chunk of that. Will, you were not a part of that, huh?
No, I mean, it doesn't matter how many times you ask me. I still didn't bet it, Gil. It was a missed opportunity. We lived to fight another day. Happy for everyone, though. It was good exposure. Happy everyone won. It was a hell of a call.
Wait, did you bet the under 4.5 in the first five of the Rays-Angels game today where we completely dodged the bullet of all bullets, second and third, no outs, already a run in? What?
Yeah, I did. I've been watching it the whole time.
In the first inning, it was second and third and no outs. They already had a run in, and we somehow survived that. So,
by the way, easy peasy call on that Yankees game last week on the Megapod too. We don't want to leave that hanging.
That was my Yankees worst lineup I've ever seen in the history of Major League Baseball. Bet.
Yeah, the Fakasa lineup, I should say. And Todd Wishnev, star of this here show, and of course Showtime docuseries. Action
at T Wishnev on. on Twitter. If you still want to get in on my WhatsApp list that I have for in-game stuff, I periodically will add people, but it does take time to like type in everybody's contacts and get them all in the WhatsApp. So if you want to be in it, you can, but give me some, you know, it might take a, you know, a week or so to get you actually in the thing. You can follow what I have on the WhatsApp is I post all the in-game picks that I'm playing as they're happening. So some people have been enjoying that.
All right. You about to get a flood now. Flood. I'll be on a numbers game each and every morning, including tomorrow, 10 a.m. Eastern, 7 a.m. Pacific on VSIN, part of the DK Network. Thanks for listening to the Megapod. Good luck with all your picks. Week 3 in the National Football League.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.